teachings from the question Honorable Matthew was raising for life, that she is not convinced that the aspect agenda is properly updated. She got to the lady. She put it nicely, very diplomatic. Maybe then I must put it a little bit stronger. It is a known fact that there was an admission, and the South Africa knows that there were properties that were taken by many people. Others may be linked with the public servant as well. Then, realizing that has happened, we tried to be polite. We said to people, we are giving them a sort of a moratorium and understanding that they were tempted. The matter was a bit complex for them, so they ended up giving themselves these properties because they thought it was only them who knew. So there was a sort of persuasion. There's a program called Bring Back What Belongs to the People. I'm told that was your program that was related to that matter. Now, we think there should have been a progress on that. So you're not dodging and a matter tends to implicate you. Just by dodging. Why dodge if you are clean? Why dodge it? So that's why the Honorable Lady is saying, I'm not convinced. She left it there. You see? So I'm now helping you to understand why is she not convinced. Because she knows something. And because South Africa, they would know many public web properties that are across South Africa that many a time not really accounted for. Others are with some people. So that information, how far have you gone? What is it yielding? What are the problems? So at least if you touch, you say something, it will at least assist us to really trust that you are working towards solving it. But dodging it is not really helpful at all. It makes us to really think, even things that you are saying are complex. It's time to make us be scared. And now we have told you, nothing is complex. Dodge. Answer. The things are simple. They become complex when you dodge. Following the way things must be done. There's even, I think members have participated more on that one. But there was also another program, an initiative that was to use the National Youth Service to maintain buildings. So we think we should have been given also a report on that one, because it's quite the program that you know is your program. Now, not to touch it by one paragraph makes us to say the building, because it is also linked to these buildings that we're talking about, these properties, also linked to the payment of everybody. I think there would be those questions that I would want to add, but generally speaking, the many other questions and the comments that the members have put, I'm quite happy from where I sit that we give you enough opportunity to answer. I think I like that comment that some businesses end up closing because they were not paid, in particular the small ones, which means failure to pay, in particular the small service providers, is very disastrous for South Africa that is still developing, in particular for those that were excluded previously by the apartheid regime. So the Constitution expects us to reverse the imbalances of the past by ensuring that the participants are now from everywhere, including in particular those that were marginalized. So, but if they are not assisted and the excuse is an address like Honorable Masiela was making an example about. So it's clear that we may end up destroying many of the people who are supposed to be uplifting. The Constitution expects us to uplift, to assist, and even train, even arm them. Where there's a potential, we must really assist. I'm quite happy with the input of the honorable members. But they were even telling you that in any organization, there should be an in-house training. Can't say no, people are not trained anywhere. Can't be. There should be. So I think if you can answer, give more answers, if the honorable DM, like I said, will indicate if you want to start or in the end,
Thank you, Chair. In our caucus, I think you want to add another caucus as well. I was suggesting that I come in at the end, but the colleagues were suggesting that I begin. So let me follow the scripts of democratic centralism in the case of just immediately to begin with the two fundamental points that you raised, Chairperson. I think our understanding was obviously that it was about the meeting the requirements and imperative of it, less as possible meeting the 30-day payment issue for the reasons that you've currently signaled. Failure to do so can easily put our particularly small business completely out of business, cause a lot of jobs and so on. But if you would like us to give you an update, which we can do, on progress made in terms of illegally stolen, basically, public property and operations like that, we can do that in detail. If there are members, if you say people are sitting with the information, it's a criminal not to indicate what information you're sitting on. I'm not suggesting that anybody has got hard information at this desk here. But please let us know. And that's part of our plea, that if the members of the public are aware of often it's former Bantustan properties, buildings, and so on, which somehow disappeared at the present. But just to reassure you that fundamentally we are very convinced that our removal of asset register is now 99% complete and adequate. That's not to say that they are not invisible, stolen, or whatever disappeared properties, but overwhelmingly, you know, the 30,000 land parcels and the 92,594 buildings is a very accurate picture, we think, of what is vested with the National Department as the concern. Okay? The big problem, so that was work completed as part of the major turnaround of this department, and it was at the heart of the problem within the department. Mm. If you don't have a sense of what your asset register is, you're flying without navigation, you don't know what you're doing. And that can open up the way for all kinds of funny things to happen. The big challenge in the recent years, and that was what, and the recent year really, and that has been the matter in which the Auditor General was the key issue, which we think unfairly, but anyway, the Auditor General had a problem with in the valuation. Okay, it's one thing to know where these properties are, what the coordinates are, how many of them there are, and how many structures there are on the land parcel. And that in itself was a major, major issue, because a lot of the problems were, are they properties of the National Department? Mm. Are they properties of provincial departments? Mm. Are they, and then there are other national departments like Land and Rural Development, which is also a custodian of some of the land parcels and so on. So lot of the complexities in terms of just identifying them. The next problem is then getting market value, and that is a long haul, and we've made progress, but that was one area. Anyway, so yeah, okay. On the maintenance issue in the National Youth Service, I actually serve on the interministerial committee dealing with the National Youth Service issue, and I think where that's gone to now. Originally, there was this idea of a kind of rather militarized version of what a National Youth Service would be. You know, it's almost like conscription in the bad old days. What we're now saying is that essentially is that there are a range of youth-based employment activities, which would include, for instance, doctors serving out their community service would be one aspect of it, but that's not appropriate in other professions, by and large. Okay, that would be one element. Many of our expanded public works programs and the community work program under COPTER, the Working on Fire program of environmental tests and so on, are youth dominated. And so what we're saying is what we should do is a bit like with Proudly South African. It's a wonderful campaign which I think has gone off the boil a little bit, is that we should brand a range of different things which are youth focused, in which people are maybe earning a stipend but doing useful things for the public, basically. We should, in addition to branding them Working on Fire or whatever, also have a National Youth Service kind of branding as well. So it's not one thing in which, but it's a range of things. So that has been one of our approaches. So you will have seen around Parliament, people in orange uniforms with PPWP on backs of their overalls. So part of the attempt to address the issue of maintenance is to use the expanded public works program, but that has its own challenges and problems. One of them is that what happens to them after their service. So we will continue in maintenance to also deploy, and the honourable Chance will be pleased to hear that we're not doing out of business existing small businesses and so on that are providing them many of the maintenance services and so on, and how to get that balance right is a challenge. We also want to in-house more and more. So we historically, and we still have in our regional offices, workshops, okay? But, and they sort of fell by the way a little bit, and we're starting to rebuild them. But then there's a further issue, okay, which I think has come up recently and certainly one of the recent portfolio committees that I was. Who carries the responsibility for changing light bulbs? Is it the custodian department or is it prisons? I mean, it's ridiculous that we, and I think in your Eastern Cape visit, the oversight visit, that you came across, I think, in one of the correction service facilities, that DPW was responsible for changing light bulbs and so on. So that's something that we want to sort out. And when we, one of the things we're doing is we wanted to develop a white paper. What is public works? What is our function? What is the custodial function versus the kind of caretaker function of those who are, and so on. So I think lots of the challenges in the emergency maintenance, what we call emergency maintenance, unplanned maintenance, has to, and that's where a lot of the problems occur, right? Not paying within 30 days, but also financial, invoice creep, changing a light bulb becomes also doing the plumbing and so on, and maybe legitimately sometimes, maybe not, and so on. So that's why our CFO has correctly identified that as a big issue. If we want to improve our 30-day payment, but also clean up the health area. Okay. So, but the larger issue of should we be in that space, or should the actual occupant department have responsibility, and how do you divide up the responsibility? Because we do want to. We are not planning not to do planned maintenance. That's where we want to go, and our own legislation requires it. The governing legislation requires to do that. So we're not budgeting in order to do emergency, but the emergency maintenance pulls our budget in that direction. That's our problem. So how do we get that right? So it's not complex, it's very simple, but it is actually quite complex as well in real life. Then going back to the beginning, so I really appreciate the we took a chance and we got a chance, and it was, I really appreciate all of the issues that you raised. Obviously the CFO and the colleagues were a better place to answer much of the detail that you were trying, but let me then talk to some of the issues where you went a bit wider. I think it's a part of the complex, the simple complexity, or the complex simplicity, is exactly the question you asked. How do we get the balance right between red tape and accountability? The money that we have is not our money, it's public money. Okay. And therefore we need to make sure that we are not corruptly paying corrupt tenders and all kinds of things like that. We do need to be standards and so on the other hand. But are the standards so complex that it's actually running out of business? It's just impossible for a small business. For instance, we're in a relatively large business. I mean, you could put the challenge simply, but to resolve it in practice is not straightforward. And Cox and others will speak in more depth. But you see, as he said at the beginning, managing a project of building a correctional service facility is not the same as purchasing pencils. Okay. And in 1495, well, I was born before, okay, 1495, so I'm even behind that, but the kind of invoice in, payment out kind of thing, you know, if you've got to bring in quantity surveyors, structural engineers, a range of others to make sure that what you're paying for, you've got what you're paying for, all of that thing, that introduces a lot of, it's not just buying pencils or paying for air tickets, which is what we seem to be able to do quite well with our travel agency, which Treasury has recognised. Okay. So I think there was a misunderstanding. I think it was from the Honourable Secretary who said, what, are we trying to dodge Treasury? No. On the contrary, we're working very closely with Treasury, and particularly the Chief Procurement Officer, a development that we really welcome as the Department of Public Works, because the space that we're in, we're not perhaps alone, but the space we're in is more complicated than a lot of the procurement that many other departments are involved in. First of all, just the scale of the procurement that we're undertaking, but also the professional complexity that we're involved in. So, you know, construction projects, for instance, are multi-year, and the annual budgeting cycle introduces problems in that respect. So now the municipalities complain about that. They're not sure about the outlet because there's an empty air space. But how guaranteed is the second year and the third year and so on. So there's many, many challenges of that kind. And so we've been very, very helped by the Chief Procurement Officer in developing standards and requirements, which we really welcome, that are appropriate to the kind of procurement that we're doing. But the test of the pudding will be, are they helping the process, or are they introducing red tape? And I don't think there's an easy answer. I think, and it's a good question always to ask. But also at the same time, and again, that's partly to address another question that arose. Why should the minister do roadshow? The minister does roadshows not in order to relieve a chief director or whatever their day-to-day responsibilities to making sure that things happen, but it's in order to give some profile, in order to make sure that chief directors and so forth and regional offices, because the visits are typically roadshows to our regional offices, to make sure that they understand the importance of the 30-day payment requirement, for instance. But to hear from them what the problems they are encountering, but also to engage with suppliers. And they come forward and say, I haven't been paid for 2 years, et cetera, et cetera. So, so we should have systems where, and again, colleagues have raised this, Cox and others will be able to answer it more effectively, if you've got a complaint, you're not getting paid, you have to just keep phoning the same person who's basically trying to squeeze a, what did you call a commission? So then we'll pay you, but I'd like $100,000 in my account, and then you'll get paid. And so that happens. And that's why, that's one of the important reasons why we need to watch the 30 days thing. There might be good reasons why the payment isn't happening, but sometimes it's because some official somewhere is trying to get backhanded, putting the squeeze on the thing. So it's very important to watch those things. These are visits that don't displace the responsibilities at the level, but to impress upon one department, particularly at the regional office level, but also to hear the challenges of others, but at the same time also interact with suppliers.
Okay.
So, in no particular order now, but the last question, which was a little bit out of the subject of the Honourable Chancellor, is given the budgetary and fiscal challenges that we've got, shouldn't we consider liquidating, was the word you used, some of our assets? A word I prefer to use would be dispose of or lease out. And we're definitely at a political level encouraging our colleagues to move more energetically into those spaces. We don't want to be passively accumulate land parcels or buildings for the sake of being 7 times bigger than Growthwood, which we are, by the way. Though their properties by and large look a lot better than us. So disposing of is definitely something we need to look at, but also the prospect of leasing out, and not just leasing in. And we do lease out some buildings, but I think that we've got some very well located buildings, which one of them is our regional office on the, maybe I should go there, but yeah, okay. In prime position here in Cape Town, okay. Now, do we want workshops there, or could we actually be assisting the fiscal constraints that we're operating under by competing with some of the plenty tenants down, competing with those own buildings there and releasing them out to whether rentals and us. Okay. I'm not saying that we're probably going to do that, but that's specific, yes. But that's the kind of frame of mind. Just to add to that, in terms of disposal, Treasury is correctly saying to us that before we were tending to give away land, for instance, to municipalities, free. Okay. And Treasury is saying to us, but hang on, we are budgeting through the municipal infrastructure grant and other things, money for the acquisition of land to municipalities. So we're not saying that you should sell it at a market-related price. If it's for development purposes, like human, and we were in a constructive discussion with the City of Cape Town around that. So they've identified land around here, which we agree with, is suitable for mixed income, well-located housing development, for instance, and it's our land. But Treasury is saying to us, and they're right, you can't just give it away from them, because the City of Cape Town has got budget for that. But at the same time, if it's genuinely for development and purposes and so on, then a disposal could be affected, a transfer could be affected. But we would need to get some money for our property management trading. Honourable Sultani, I think I don't know why you're saying that we're trying to that we come here as clean DPW with a clean or relatively clean unqualified auditor, and we're shuffling the challenges of the PMT undertaking. We here as DPW and the property management trading entity, and the CFO actually is the CFO both, and the DG, acting DG, is the acting DG for both entities. Okay. So the PMTE, for all the reasons that are outlined, is the one that has the most,
not so complex,
challenges, okay, but they're complex, okay, because of this huge portfolio it's got and so on. So, and you ask us questions directly about the property management trading. In fact, all of the questions you're asking us today relate to the property management trading. So we're not hiding behind, look, the DPW is doing well. Some of the newspaper headlines, which we like, are pushed up. DPW gets unqualified audits, and then maybe the team gets some. But that's not us. We're upfront about the challenges that we've got. Regional offices complain, and you've made this point as well before. And here again, where you're wrong is when we talk about Pretoria, for instance. We're not talking about head office Pretoria, we're talking about the regional office in Pretoria, and there's a regional office in Joburg and so on. Now, part of the turnaround strategy is that we identified that particularly big projects in our regional offices, which looked rather dicey. So part of trying to clean up in the turnaround process was to say, whoops, we're going to cut the amount, you know, where they've got, as it were, freedom to proceed. I forget what the cutoff point was, but in terms of tenders and contracts and so on, there was an upward limit, which they didn't like, because they feel frustrated, and one understands that, and often the frustration is for good reasons and not for bad reasons. But we felt we had to do that, so that we didn't allow some ballooning of expenses that were happening in some provinces, in some regional offices, one of which might not have been a million miles away from the place that you always talk about, as you probably know what problem. But now, again, this is one of those things where I think one needs to, the whole issue of centralizing and devolution, both things have advantages and disadvantages. And I think that if things start to move better, then the more you can carry decision making closer to where it needs to happen, in principle it's better. So it's something that DG is under review from our side. Do we lift the ceiling and so on? So it's a question of putting the foot on the brakes, taking off the brakes, etc., according to the reality and according to where we are in getting our functions right. Okay. I think everyone and we were almost asking you to tell us, and you're telling us we need to look at satellite offices and so on. But there will be a cost involved. But as you say, what is the cost of not doing it? So I think obviously, and again, that's part of devolution. Localizing, and I thought that the CFO was almost asking you to say, why don't you have satellite offices? So that we can go to the Treasury and say, portfolio committee is insisting. Thank you for raising that. The other devolution issue relates, which numbers of colleagues have raised, is the issue of concurrence. Now, we've got the National Department of Public Works, but we've got nine, with various names, nine provincial departments of public works as well. And constitutionally, these are concurrent functions. And ideally, in my view, but then, hey, look which political party I belong to, I would like to see a more centralized system. I mean, I was at Cadetta, we lost the battle. And I think we've got a fairly federalised system, for better and for worse, in South Africa. And one of these things played out at the public works level. So, I mean, unless you change the constitution, and the EFF is not here, so none of us are federal committees. Maybe some tiny committees. We're also now the constitution, but not on this issue. I think that's a reality we need to work with, rather than just throw our arms up in despair. And our MINDEX have been touched with, certainly in the time that I've been in DPW, our MINDEX have been going extremely well, and we have a very cordial and effective relationship, regardless of which political party may or may not be in power in a particular province. And for instance, in the Western Cape, our MECs, and we've had two MECs over the period that I've been here, excellent cooperation and collaboration, and lots of joint work and so on. We might have been able to pool our resources better under a different interpretation, but you don't have it. Related to that, in a sense, two questions from the Honourable Ryan. The first was a question around who's responsible for construction of schools. In Kaunting, as you correctly said, it's the provincial department of education. But then when you went to Eastern Cape, you saw that DPW and some others were sort of playing in that space. That's basically what you saw in Eastern Cape was what are called the CD schools, the Accelerated School Infrastructure Development and Accompaniment Initiative. Thank you. Yeah. It's a so-called mud school issue.
Okay.
So there was a national decision to eradicate mud schools. And because of, and particularly provinces, so the two main provinces affected are, certainly which is the main one. I think the Free State is a little bit, and Limpopo, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right, Jeff?
Yeah? Yes.
Okay, so there, basically, the idea is that let's throw national resources to assist provincial. So school construction in the Eastern Cape, by and large, remains a provincial responsibility. But with the so-called mud school issue and eradicating them, that is now that's a national initiative, I think. Not narrowly just with the department, but led by the National Department of Basic Education, working then with, amongst others, the Department of Public Works, but some of those are CD schools have been with us, some have been with IDT, some have been with Kuka, some have been with DVSA, which then relates to the other questions that you've asked. Who's in this? Cooker development doesn't fall under the Department of Public Works, doesn't fall under that. Used to be under DVSA. I don't think it's even under. I forget actually what Cooker's under, but we do use Cooker on some of our issues. Okay. IDT falls under us. Another active party is the DVSA, Development Bank of Southern Africa. There's another project and program manager that state uses, including in this state. And then there are some others as well. The trust is another, particularly in water and sanitation and so on. So that raises another broad structural issue, which we've debated a lot about. Where do we locate our own construction? Currently our own construction capacity, and therefore our challenges, and it's not the only space in which we're challenged, but our project management 20-to-1 issue is not entirely located within our construction branch, but it's there. Now, an Old Mutual or a Growth Point wouldn't have a construction branch. We've done that. Should we take that capacity out of the department, out of PMTD, and locate it in an IDT? Okay. Or do we keep it within a property management training entity? So for the moment we've kept it in. But then in a sense we've got, in two places we've got construction project management capacity we're trying to build. One in IDT specifically ourselves, and then within our construction. So we don't want to put all our eggs in one basket and find a basket that holes in it, and IDT, as we know, has got challenges. The whole story. You would have encountered some IDT challenges in the thesis company from Cape Town.
Solution?
Yep.
Just shifting with two sentences on this.
Yeah.
Tough time to
spend it. Just this last one, because if we were to do what you are doing for every person, for every answer, we won't finish, unfortunately. Also, I think we should accept that the answers, remember everybody else is still going to answer. So the DM is just assisting, but this engagement may not help us. But I do like your questioning ways, but if you are persuaded with my explanation that there are even others that are still going to answer, DM is just making the things easy for them. Because half said they look like twins, so that is so are you persuaded that this let allow them to answer?
Okay. But in any case, I'm approaching it in. You will see, Chairperson, that I haven't actually addressed the 30-day paper, which is the key focus, because I think the college is in a better place, much better place to do that than I. I thought there was one other issue, but I can't now for the moment, because I was rudely interrupted by the Honourable Sultan, not for the first time, that I've forgotten what it was. The Yeah. Okay. Let me conclude on that. Now. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Didi.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chair. I think the Deputy Minister has taken a lot of response to the Federal Services. Everything has been responded. I think we are going to respond, especially for those who have
Mission impossible.
In there are certain areas that I would just add, particularly yes, DM has responded with respect to what are we doing with respect to National Federalist Republic, that we should actually dispose some of our assets for purposes of ensuring that we build the necessary funding. I think we had already a meeting on Friday after the budget. They already approached that we had a meeting, and then we expressed our views, because our views is that much as we want to see the country performing very well, we're also mindful of about public works itself, because we don't have funding to do the maintenance that we're actually facing in the department. I think we will actually ensure that we brief our political principals, and we also brief the portfolio committee with respect to areas which we think can assist in this area. There was also a question. I think this one is very important also. The issue of representativity in our delegation is high on the agenda in the department, this one. Our government currently is focusing on ensuring that we address representativity in all the levels, particularly at the higher level. We have ring-fenced positions at the higher level currently to ensure that we recruit relevant officials who are going to address representativity. It's going to be seen within a short space of time. Yesterday we were in Expo, we checked, we moved from 37%, we're almost now at 39% in terms of gender representativity. We can actually make that those statistics available to the portfolio committee. It's an important area. The issue of holding officials accountable with respect to the 30 days payment, yes, we are doing that. There is a decision already that at the EDG level, branch heads, we need to ensure that this matter of 30 days payment is inculcated in their performance agreement, so that it must be measured from that level going downwards. I think the issue of the regulatory framework, the GM has already covered it with respect to the 30 days payment. It's a CIDB statutory provision, this one. I agree with the observation that we need to ensure that in the commissioning of our projects, we need to incorporate the issue of maintenance. This is very, very important. I think currently the debate is that in each project that we actually come up with, we need to ensure that we include the issue of facilities management. It's one area which was not taken care of in the department because of the funding issues. I think there is a very solid presentation that we can also make after we've already made before the DM and the minister to this portfolio committee as to the shortfall of maintenance of government assets, which is very, very huge, and the reasoning as to why are we in this state of affairs, and what is that can be done to address this particular challenge. It's a fact that we are aware, all of us. I think we are coming up with possibilities in the department as to what is that needs to be done to address maintenance backlog. I will ask my colleagues to add in terms of the questions, that specific questions.
Thank you very much, honourable members. I think I've noted a question around in terms of the ability for the service provider to log in.
I think it's a good point that I've noted, and you know, I'll investigate it further. I'm confirming that currently, I think when the system was put in place, it was looked at as a short-term solution to address this particular problem of the payment. So it was not actually a turnkey solution, an entire solution. And my understanding is that the entire solution would then be incorporated into the sales that have been referred to. Because if you look at their patterns, the invoices are tracked, you know, somewhere in the middle of the process, once the invoice has been delivered at the department, that's when we pick it up. But with the integrated ERP, you're going to track the invoice, like, you know, from the beginning. So it's going to be an end-to-end solution. So currently what is happening is that I think there is some communication that goes to the service provider in the form of email when the invoice gets blocked, and you know, in the I think when it gets paid, and we can look at improving if there's a need, you know, to do intermediate you know, communication. So that's one part of that. The other point that I wanted to touch on in relation to Repartal was on the backup. Okay, I think we just focused when we preparing the presentation, just, you know, at an application level. We didn't provide, you know, the entire, I think, IT solution from the spare parts and all those things. But I can confirm that having checked with my team, there is a backup, you know, on the system. It's happening at a technical level. The information is not stored on one place, but also there is a backup strategy that is in place where backups are being taken, I think, daily and weekly and on a monthly basis. At a network level also, we have redundant lines, so that is on the network. So if one line goes down, then the other line, you know, be picked up. So that is to the extent that I'm aware of currently, that the backups are being taken. The other point that I wanted to touch on was in terms of the ERP rollout. Just to explain that as far as I have looked at the situation currently, is that the Archibank has got a number of modules. And in order to enable to do training, because for each module that you put in place, you need to do the configuration. That is, you make the module talk to the business. So that's where we talk about the IT system aligning to, you know, the business requirement. Now, we actually don't do a big bang approach. So you're doing it on a modular by modular basis. So what we have presented today here was just to show that we started during this month, October, we started with user acceptance testing, which means we are enabling the users of the system to actually test the system, and they actually formally accept the system, just to ensure that we've got a fair level of comfortability that they have tested the system in line with their normal business operations. So we have done those parts, for example, for the in-well assessment, the user training has been done. And then the reactive maintenance and the call center module, we've done the user acceptance testing, and the movable asset register, we've also done the user acceptance testing. The approach is to run this as pilot for a period of 3 months, between now and I think January. So we're running actually a parallel process where we still run the current system, and we run the new system, and we do the comparison. After 3 months, we then have a level of comfort that there is the two systems tally, and therefore we are then able to, you know, roll out the system, and we're taking it module by module, and according to you know, the current plan, which I will also be reviewing, and maybe next time when we meet, we might, you know, provide more information. It was a longer term, I think, plan to actually, you know, implement the system. So I think that's where I would want to proceed.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you,
Mingus.
First of all, just apologies for slide 20 for the glass mistake that we've made there. Just on the cash and accrue question that we had about the systems that we're using, and the question that we had about why are we not using the systems that the departments are using. I just want to give members the comfort that the systems that we are implementing, the trade system, all of those are approved by National Treasury. The problem is with the departmental systems that they are honestly not designed for an accrual system. So none of the entities that are have or that have to apply accrual accounting, draft accounting principles is applying back and those types of systems because it's simply not made for an accrual system. So the system needs to be working from the very start of the transaction, as my colleague has already explained, up to the end. And this is where your cash basis accounting system is not giving you that ability, because it actually only deals with the actual payment. And that's also dealing with the question about how you actually manage an asset with a one-rand value, because that's exactly where the issue is. If you're working with a cash management system, or a cash-based accounting, that expense is expense through the income statement, and you actually never pick up the expense in your balance sheet. And that's where we need to emphasize that issue. So the systems that we are using is approved for accrual-based accounting. It's not like we don't want to use them, it's just we cannot use the departmental system.
Thank you very much. No, you're still going to come. I'm appreciating the only lady that has participated. Remember, the honorable members were not very happy that you seem not too moving faster to have the gender question. You know, South Africa has a lot of powerful ladies. Even the input she's giving, clarify this, been owning up to the grappling stakes.
Thanks, Chair and honourable members. Maybe the point that I can just make is that, in actual fact, this phenomenon is the technical principle of complex accounting system. I thought I should just make that point. She dropped a lot of the accounting standards and whatever, all this instruction.
Okay.
I'm just trying to see what else is left for residual questions, but maybe I can just start with slide 36. But there's been maybe we're not clear about the slide 36. What I must be clear about the slide 36 is that slide 36 was providing information about our challenges in the past. And that is what actually triggered the decision to develop an in-house system in Africa. A lot of the problems that we have. So it was a reflection of the past, and then it actually triggered the decision that we need to get something in motion to resolve this issue. Because of all this, the lack of accountability, it's not knowing who did what. Now we have, like you said, you know, at any given point in time, we can click on the system, we can check the invoice, you get a phone call, you put in the service provider's name, it will tell you who's holding the invoice, who's the service provider, so that to facilitate the consequence management that we can trigger that will precipitate. So I think it was maybe we just didn't make it clear enough that I should just try and assist you like that. And then there was the questions on the management. I think that the DM and the DG have tried to answer that. And I think the important one is what the DG said, that in actual fact, we owe it to committee to come and give a full brief on the portfolio, what it looks like, and what the issues around maintenance are versus the charge that you are levying to our client departments and the gas business, and how it actually makes the problem very difficult. And when you cast your mind into the future, you actually can actually, it will be something that will tell that we have an arrest situation now, we may end up with the collapse of Taliban. But also additional to that, I thought, you know, the questions around the escalation keep coming up again and again. And I think we need to really get it, you know, answered properly. So that's also probably another session that we need to have. Just to give a detailed brief of the escalation. Just what we did in terms of the entire four-year program of the legal education on the escalation. What it entailed and how we started and where we are now. And when you look at what the audit report says, the audit report is the most, you know, visible of performance measures. The auditors have expressed an opinion on the S, and they found nothing wrong with the S except for the methodology that the minister has embraced. So, if the question is asked, do you know your efforts? The answer is yes, we do. Do you know where they are? Yes, we do. Do you know the extent of these efforts? Yes, we do. The issue is on the application of didn't cost to determine the value of this effort. And it's purely a mathematical thing that did happen that then resulted in finding that. So, from what we are searching, Honorable Chair, I think we can be, as a committee, we can rest assured we know that where they are, and that's the kind of message that we have to do. And very important that we take the committee along in terms of the program that we to where we are today. So we need to do that at some point. Maybe coupled to this next one, because all together. Then on the SCM, I think I'm just trying to, you know, bundle these things together. The SCM issues, I mean, you know, tragically over the past 3 years, they've embarked on a journey to reform supply chain management in the public sector. And there's been a lot of interesting developments with respect to that. The latest of which is the current PPRs, or public procurement regulations that have been issued, that talk to the issues of, you know, at a level of detail of localization that Honorable was asking about. It's in the law, it's in the regulations, so it can now be together. And it is a challenge for each and every department to go work out the implementation plan to make sure that we comply with the regulation. And issues about subcontracting, the use of, I mean, it's very clear. And that's in a way to try and deal with the issues of how do you advance all different interests. And I think it's in the regulation. It's gone fairly fine now. And I think that's how it has happened between us and them. I mean, one of the departments, when the Office of the Chief Procurement Office was established and the decision to take the SCM, public SCM reform into the public SCM into a reform process, there were two pilot departments that existed. It was health, and the second one was public works, to test what can be done. And why public works? Because of the particularities of public works. Said that we've got things that no other department does. We lease, we've got infrastructure projects. So hence the regulation that we spoke about, the guidelines that we spoke about that, as to deal with our, you know, fit for purpose supply chain management process. We've got leasing, we've got the infrastructure, that's what we have. So yes, it's difficult to move and shift from the one, the old dispensation to the new, as we know normally, because it's quite tight. But I think that's where we are moving in terms of having personal process, personal processes that talk to our business. That is happening. I think the issue on day to day, there was a question on why don't we get clients to actually do some of these small things. If I like purpose, first, why should the clients be calling the DPW, KMT officials coming to say, what are they doing? In actual fact, the regime is set up like this. We've got specific delegations that the client department should be using their management. And that delegation is set at 100,000 rands per incident. And it is to deal with the things that are, you know, very ad hoc and business. That you don't have to be calling us go fix up something in a prison that you can do, a plumbing that's blocked or whatever. They should do it. And they have an amount of money that they should do. But as you know, everybody doesn't like to use your budget. They always want to call on something. So have to entrench the delegation to show that it happens. And so as it's enough, I mean, look at it, it's 100,000 rand per incident of an emergency work. But they are not complying accordingly. And we need to just get our approach. And then the issue of the liquidity, I think on the, you know, the disposal of the assets, I think the GM and the FDG have answered that. Maybe I could just add this up. If you look, I mean, there's the perception that comes up. When somebody takes the balance sheet of the PMT and says, wow, you've got gross assets of about 136 billion rands and your liabilities are 10. So you have net assets of 126. So why don't you sell the assets? That's the kind of thing that happens. And you just look at the balance sheet. Not understanding that. The 136 billion rands gross assets. That's the portfolio that you have, the 92,000 structures. And the 92,000 structures that you have, remember, those structures are allocated to the client departments to be able to do your work. So 98% of that you can't do anything about, because otherwise where does government provide services? So it's not free assets that are sitting there, can, you know, move them around. Yeah. So that's what I wanted to clarify. That's all encompassing. And over and above that, even the ones that you believe are probably access to the system, you still need to put some money into them to fully optimize and develop it. Because if you just sort of take a little building that is not being occupied, nothing is happening, it's a little of time in Cape Town, you're at disposal of people to get nothing. But if you can just do a little bit of work, that's what I mean. And the general occupancy of our buildings today is about 95%. It's a vast system that is not occupied. And in the bigger scheme of things, I mean, this is what it is. And that's what we're looking at. So the municipal services that you are paying largely on the occupied. You are not paying for unoccupied, although we have a leakage of money in terms of unoccupied. You're going to pay security, you're going to do whatever else. So, and that's the next phase of our turnaround, is to disaggregate the assets. Look at the taxes, look at the space economics, efficiency, allocation, and all this kind of thing, and determine what do we need to actually hire on. And that's what we're going to be doing, starting with specifically those unemployed. And the issue, there was a question on the projects, where are these projects, and blah, 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 blah. I think that's another presentation for another day, because that's a detailed thing. It's 3,000 projects all over the country, and I think we owe it to the country to come and do those presentations as to where are they, what stage they are, which problems, how much, at what stage, all of it. I think that can be very helpful for us to do that. And the issue, there's a question on the list, as to, you know, what do you do, when are you going to exit the list? I mean, you spend 4.3 billion rands a year. Maybe just as an indication for the list. We have 92,000 structures, of which public works or the PMT uses probably about 10%, as in within ourselves. The rest is given to client departments, and we must charge rentals and receive money. The amount of money we receive for those, which is about 86,000 structures, all of which we do on the basis of the combination charge for client departments, we collect in totality 4.5 billion rands, and that 4.5 billion rands was utilized to pay the rates and taxes, to maintenance, to everything else. And that's what you get. If you compare that to the lease portfolio from the private sector, we lease somewhere about 6.3 million square meters of property, which is the 3,000 that we are talking about. We are paying 4.3 billion rands. So I mean, already you can see where your problem is. One hand, you've got a massive payment on the business, but you're under collection here. But you have an expectation from the public and everybody else to do the particular work. So in essence, we have a fair amount of unfunded. So the issue is the following. What is the appropriate ratio of the system to what you owe? And at what point you're going to be able to get to this one? We look at the kind of And then maybe just tell the slide on an issue that I think is on our radar raised about the slide 27 and 28. We just should not try and avoid that, because it's probably going to think that somebody's fooling who somebody. Sometimes you have the issue of who's fooling who. Slide 27. Slide 27 is just, it's a, the question of the 22% thing is not very big. 22% on slide 27, but on slide 28, it's 85%. I think the issue is that it is not incorrect. It's a question of the denominator. The slide 27 takes the total, which includes the unpaid, whereas the slide 28 just takes the paid invoices, so it's totally paid invoices, and how much was in 30 days, how much was outside 30 days. The other one shows the invoices that are issued in totality, how much were paid in 30 days, how much were paid after 30 days, and how much are unpaid, and relevant percentages there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
There's just a question on the target. What is our target for our performance information for FAME? Now, currently our target is 100%. And the question is also asked, where is it in the regulations? It's originally regulation 8.2.3 that requires us to make the payment within 30 days and make a contract stipulate that as well. But our target is 100%, and that is part of our strategic plan as well as our operational plan, and it is embedded also in the performance agreement of the relevant
manager. Maybe this is all right. It's 100% because of the law. You can't plan for 90% when the law says 100%. So it's always the problem that you're going to have. So we'll have to come, step in and bow to say we did not meet 100% for the law.
Thank you very much. DM, anything?
Very happy, thank you.
So there's something from the IT boss.
I think it's just one last point, which also talks to the asset register. In the few weeks that I've been with the department, I've also seen a GIS tool, that is a geographic information system, that is integrated within the future of PMT, as you mentioned in slide number 18. And I think the main point I wanted to show that is that what I've seen, we have an opportunity to interrogate the assets, where we can actually display on geographically on a map the land that belongs to the municipality, and the land, for example, that belongs to DP County. And maybe we can even be able to collaborate if there's a need to build in that specific area. We can also interrogate the leases. Okay, so we can show where the leases are and where we own the building. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can interrogate to say, why are we leasing when we own buildings? So those are some of the things that I think they will become more in the near future as we build this particular integrated GRC. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So, Mr. Sedan, if you can be persuaded that I'm told already we're not meeting the department for the last time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm told even next week, that other week, that so we are going to be together. Mm-hmm. So if you really get everything, there's still another opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be persuaded, advise that you should not stress the meeting too much. But I want to join Honourable Member Patricia Adams that indeed in Northern Cape you have orators. Because I know of a number of other people. You see, so Oliphant is one of them. So the list is long, so they are orators, so they are good, they are passionate. So it is rare where you find the CFO able to express properly. They talk in figures. You talk in both. So I think DM, acting DG, please, we don't want these surprises that we always see in department. No people are appearing too quickly. Because it assists the department to move, to stabilize, and also make the AG to have all the answers, the concerns answers, but if you change them all the time, you forever blame God when the problem is with your back. You're changing people too much. So I think let's agree that the questions that may not be answered, you noted them, because I've noted many as well, because the Honorable Members raised many areas that I think in a future engagement, always, because you may be dealing with one subject matter, but our work is related to the next one, so you may answer even the other subject matter when you're dealing with the other one. So I think if that persuades the members, that Honorable Members, are you persuaded or is that the human focus? So what I'm saying is that in the following meeting, but we did note the things that we are going to put add in the program, like that, those that you have indicated you are ready to present. I think the quite would be very informative. I think it will help us to know where things are. I think one thing that I want you not to forget, the issue of transportation. The issue of ensuring that the small man, whether it's a woman, the small woman, must also feel that he or she is prioritized. You know, this thing of one company enjoying every priority, and is paid when others are not paid. This one is paid all the time in all the departments. So that ensures those kind of things, you work them out, then everybody must feel that they are equal in the eyes of Public Works Department. So, DM, we must thank you for being here. We are quite happy with the answers that are given. We are looking forward to corrections of areas of concern, because answers and no, but we must walk the talk. No. So because we can talk good things, but if you still have entities that are showing that you are not, your eyes sometimes do leave the ball, becomes a problem. So please, let's work together, ensure that public work becomes the envy of other departments. Thank you very much. We come to the end of this meeting. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.